Welcome, everyone, to the bonus follow-up call I promised you guys from the Underground Online Seminar 2. This is our copywriting panel that was to be held live there, and we had to reschedule it for a teleseminar. So I have with me Mr. Michael Fortin, who... Hey there, Michael. Who is if you guys are listening to our pre-teleseminar little ramblings, Michael's getting married, which is coming up right in August, right?
You got it.
Yeah, very exciting. And then I have with me Mr. Marlon Sanders.
I'm here and glad to be here. Michael, I'll tell you a funny story. At Yonex Seminar, you took me down and introduced me to everybody, and I met another girl on Yonex staff who's marrying someone else. I'm sitting there the whole seminar thinking it's your fiancé. And she keeps talking about her fiancé, and you had the same first name. I'm, like, so confused the whole entire time. She's talking about one guy, and I'm talking about the other. I'm like, oh, my God, I just love your, you know. I just love the guy you're married. I just love, you know, I mean, it's the funniest story. Anyway, go ahead, Yannick.
That's very good. All right, you guys want to give a quick intro on your copywriting prowess? Or, I mean, Fortin, you're really probably your most well-known piece is for writing for John Reese's Million Dollar Day. Is that right? Is that probably the most well-known one?
Yeah, Frank Kern's Underachiever.
Yeah, I mean, you've written sales letters, probably have generated, would you say, $20, $30, $40 million more?
Oh, gosh. Oh, yeah, plus.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I've written copy for a lot of the top marketers out there. A lot of the guys that are very well known on the internet, like Sean Casey, Frank Kern, even Jay Abraham. And so I've written copy that, especially on the internet, especially websites and info products and stuff like that.
And not just make money info. You've also done all kinds of other stuff, from hair restoration to
weight loss to you name it. Actually, when I first started as a copywriter, and that's sort of something similar to your background, Yannick, is that I first started out as a marketing consultant. I really didn't call myself a copywriter because doctors really don't care about copywriters, but they do care about marketing consultants. I was a copywriter primarily focused on cosmetic surgeons.
Yeah.
So I was heavy into producing infomercials, late-night infomercials, which, by the way, after almost 15 years, they're still running on late-night TV as we speak.
Oh, wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, exactly. And I started out that way, and What I did when I first started out in sales was knocking on doors and getting the doors slammed in my face. And what I wanted to do was I didn't want to get rejected anymore. I really had this deep fear of rejection, and I still do. So what I decided to do is write lead generation pieces so that my prospects would come to me. They would want a sales presentation with me. So the fear of rejection was completely removed. And then when I realized I became a top salesperson for a large Fortune 500 corporation, I thought, well, there's got to be something in this copywriting thing. So then I jumped in full in head on, and I became a full-time copywriter. And of course, most people know me as Michael Fortin, or the Success Doctor is my main company. But
right.
I've been doing this for online specifically for about 8-9 years now.
Very good. And Marlon Sanders is a another gentleman very familiar to most people who study good copywriting online, and you started also doing client work, right, Marlon?
Well, actually, I started out as a professional buyer. I bought from all of Michael's ads. So, I mean, I needed them all, the weight loss, the hair replacement, the impotence cure, all of those things Michael did. I was a very good customer of his. I probably supported all of his ads for years. But actually, to be serious, I started out, without a lot of a clue about copywriting. And back then you didn't have the Michael Fortin with his site showing you how to do all this stuff. You didn't have your incredible copywriting course. You didn't have all these resources. So I learned really just the really, really, really long, hard way. As a freelance writer, I wrote for clients in the daytime. I did telemarketing at night to make ends meet, and it took a long time. But one day, everything changed when I stumbled across a thing I call the Amazing Form that sells products like crazy, and I started getting paid really well to write for clients. I got $750 a page, up to $10,000-$12,000 a letter as a freelance copywriter. My favorite thing was to go down to Starbucks and sit, write a page or two, a copy, and make $750 or $1,500 there in an hour or two when people are rushing in and out to get to work. So you can make more money in a couple hours than they were likely going to make all week long.
Yep.
And so I think that was one thing. One of my best clients was Walter Itsy-Bitsy Haley, who passed away last year. It's worth about $600 million. You know that you're in someone's home who has – he had built a new home, and I was down there to write copy for him. He's like, Marlon, why don't you stay in my room in the old house? So I'm there, and the next day he's like, well, did you go swimming? And I'm like, no, I didn't see the pool. And he's like, well, tonight open the door. So there's a little door in his bedroom. You open the door, and you go through the spa room, and then you go to this Olympic-sized swimming pool in his bedroom. Olympic size. But you notice there's, like, the little handles that go down into the pool that are unusual, and I asked about those. And anyway, it was Franklin D. Roosevelt swimming pool. For those of you in Australia and UK and stuff, he's ex-ex-o president of the United States, who was in a wheelchair. Mm. And he flew in the swimming pool.
Wow.
Had it installed in his bedroom. That's when you know you're worth quite a bit of money. So the great thing about having a client like that is they always pay their bills. and they need, like, lots of letters and stuff, right? And so, but I think is with you, Yannick, probably it never ceases to amaze you. The thing about copy is that it's words and a piece of paper or a website, and it brings in thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. It changes businesses. It sells products like crazy, and it changes lives. And it's probably the best skill you can have, and yet it's the one that for many people is the most elusive.
Yeah, I think it's a very learnable skill. What do you guys think?
Marlon said something that's really, really important, because if you were to take all my websites away overnight, if you were to take away all my lists, if you were to take away everything, I would be with this one skill that Marlon talks about, this one skill of copywriting. I can literally build myself back up, not necessarily overnight, but very, very fast.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the 20 years that it took me to where I am today. So is it a learnable skill? Absolutely. You know, my story, what I was mentioning earlier about the fact that I feared rejection, there's a reason for that. You know, I was born and raised into an abusive home, and so I had these deep psychological, scars, I guess, if you want to call it that, where I feared rejection tremendously. I was sort of an agoraphobic as a teenager. In fact, that's where I started, being on the Internet, quote-unquote, because I was surfing BBSs. There was no Internet in those days when I was, 12 years old. But I was on bulletin board services and stuff like that. I was mostly living my entire childhood in my bedroom, if not at school. And when I wanted to go into sales, because I wanted to fight my fear of rejection dead on, I had to declare bankruptcy because I was living on straight commission, and for 6 months I was literally living off of macaroni and cheese. And so I failed, and actually I went bankrupt twice in my life. So I learned the skills that I needed to learn in order to get to where I am. So I wasn't born, a lot of people say you have to be a born salesperson, you have to be a born copywriter.
I said
that's BS. You can learn it. It's a very learnable skill. It took a long time for me because of my situation, but anyone can learn. That's true, you know?
Yeah, I agree. What are some of the quick things that you would tell someone who wants to really learn it and get really good at copy?
Well, there's actually three things. The first thing that I would absolutely want them to do is to read copy that has been proven to sell. And, you have to start building a swipe file. That's every copywriter out there has a swipe file. You, Yannick, have one. I have one. I'm sure Marlon has one.
What's a swipe file, by the way, just so people know the terminology?
Sure. Well, a swipe file is a file of sales letters and ads and direct mail pieces and websites that have been proven to be very profitable, very successful. And you know that when you read that copy, of course you're going to read it for what the message means. What you want to do is read between the lines, so to speak. You want to see how they introduce, certain ideas in the story, how they write the headlines, what kind of offers do they create, how do they connect with the target market. And what you do is you have the ability to swipe, meaning to copy. A copywriter is also a person who copies. Don't copy verbatim, of course, because now you're going to get into a legal problem.
Right.
But you can copywriting is really formulaic. Kennedy said that. He said that copywriting is really formulaic. And you can follow, if you have a swipe file and you read more and more and more copy, you'll notice that some formulas repeat themselves over and over again. And when you build your own swipe file, you can easily take some of those headlines, some of those the ways that offers are introduced, some of those closes, call to actions, and so on and so forth, and then transform them to fit your product, your solution, your offer, your target market. That's what a swipe file is, and that's the first thing. The second thing is to actually buy some books, read some books about copywriting. There are a few of them out there, but I'll just name just some of my most favorite ones right now. The first one is, of course, Eugene Schwartz's Breakthrough Advertising. That's a book that I highly recommend.
Very, very good one. It took me a couple reads to really make sure I knew what he was talking about.
Exactly.
That wasn't an easy read.
No, it wasn't. But I can tell you that I'm a real fan, and I'm in love with, and actually, if, you know, no pun intended, I'm fascinated by his fascinations. And what a fascination he calls it is just bullets. But bullets, not just for the sake of being a bullet. There's a way to write bullets that will get people to salivate and whip out their wallets and buy your product. Another book would be Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion by Dr. Robert Cialdini. That is another great book, and it's actually more scientific, but it's proven stuff about human nature and human behavior, like social proof and the law of reciprocity and all those things. You'll see that in copy, because when you read those books and you go back to your swipe file, you're going to go, I understand. And another book would be the Robert Collier Letter Book. Very good book, and Claude Hopkins' Scientific Advertising. So those are four major books that I highly recommend. The third of those 3 points I mentioned earlier is to actually start writing copy yourself. There's no better way to learn than to actually go out there in the trenches, roll up your sleeves, and start writing copy. Sometimes you could actually write copy word by word, word for word, from some of those top sales letters, because you get the idea, the process, the mental process that you need to get in your mind when you start writing copy. But writing your own copy and even testing it out, very often, for example, whenever I have a junior copywriter who wants me to teach them on how to write copy, the first thing I ask them to do is write me a sales letter on how and why I should hire you. And that tells me a lot about their skill, or at least their skill level, or at least their level of desire and passion. And those are my 3 points right there.
Yeah, and I totally agree with the writing it out by hand. And I heard that, I think, first from Gary Halbert, and that really had tremendous impact on my copywriting skills when I learned that when I was, I don't know, 18 maybe. I started out pretty young, maybe 18 or 19, being exposed to direct response marketing. And I just remember writing out by hand Ted Nicholas ads. I remember writing out by hand some Halbert ads. I remember writing out by hand some Dan Kennedy things, and also, you know, like big swipe file books that are out there, like The Greatest Direct Mail Sales Letters of All Time and Million Dollar Mailings.
The process is that when you read proven sales letters, when you read them, very often you'll read it with the eyes of a reader.
Yeah.
And it's hard, it's really hard sometimes to try to capture the essence, the thinking process that the writer has put into that sales letter. But when you rewrite that sales letter by hand, when you actually write down the word here, now you read a sentence from the swipe file, and you write out that sentence on your notepad, then there's an old Chinese saying, I don't want to be philosophical, but they say that I see and I forget, I hear and I remember, I do and I understand.
Mm-hmm.
So when you write down, then you start, oh my gosh, I understand what Marlon was trying to do here in his amazing formula sales letter. And that's my point, is that when you write it down word by word, you get the understanding of the mental processes that go behind the writing of that sales letter.
Yeah.
Why would you start with an intro like this? Why would you use this kind of tactic here? Why would you put bullets there? Why did you put a testimonial here? What kind of testimonial? What does it mean? What does it do? All those things you'll get in your mind. You'll say, and then you'll be able to just take a keyboard and write your own sales letter.
Marlon, any thoughts on what you teach people when they want to learn copy?
Well, first of all, I'd like to underscore the importance of everything that Michael said. The swipe file, I put them in. I have two types of swipe files. The best letters go in the plastic sheets and go into giant 4 and 5 inch D-ring binders.
Uh-huh.
And then all the other stuff I put in plastic crates that I stack up. And so, yeah, I have massive swipe files. And it's like I hired Matt about a year ago, who works in my home office here. And when I first trained Matt, I gave him John Carlton's videos. Of course, I gave him my ebook that I've written on the topic, salesletters.com. Great domain, huh?
That is a good one.
I gave him your course on it, because the swipe file, I mean, if you want an instant swipe, how many of you on the call would like to have an instant swipe file? I mean, like, you're like, hey, I ain't got a year to put a swipe file together. I don't got 2 years. I need the swipe file like yesterday. Well, that's what Yannick put together in his course. And the great thing is it's internet specific. I mean, it's got all the pop-ups in there. It's got all the exit stuff. It's got everything. It's complete turnkey swipe all. Yannick's not paying me to say this, by the way. It's true. That's what I use to train Matt. And and Michael Fortin, the stuff that he does in terms of his critiques and all of that, because it shows you the psychology. Absolutely invaluable. I do want to give a little bit of background on this, though. Back when I was learning to write copy, I was a copywriter for – actually, the formula had already come together, the amazing formula had already come together at that point in my brain, and I'm working for a guy who used to be a really big guru and spoke at all the seminars. He's gone on to other business endeavors now, but his name was Phil Kratzer, and he spoke at the Gary Halbert seminars and all this stuff, and he had a big company at the time, and I was his copywriter, slaving away like 8 hours a day, banging out copy, right? And but there was a guy that he was promoting named Bob Serling, and he was selling Bob Serling's copywriting course, the first course that I ever saw that broke sales letters down into something other than the ADA formula, attention, interest, action, desire. Attention, interest, desire, action, which is a good formula, but really didn't tell you how to do anything. Bob broke it down into a 16-step sequence. I took that sequence and said, well, this is really good, but really what I'm doing when I write for clients is a 12-step formula. I codified a 12-step formula, put it in an amazing formula, put it in Give Me My Money Now, the other stuff that I sell. Pretty much any time you study copywriting now on the internet, you're going to see a 12-step formula that's basically what I articulated then and broke it down into step-by-step, because prior to that, you know, John Caples would talk about writing the first sentence or having a good headline or things, but there really wasn't step by step how do you write the thing?
Yep.
How do you make it all come together? And so that to me, and I know it had a big influence on Jim Edwards on it, when Jim heard me speak down in Boulder, Colorado, and I laid out the 12-step formula, I mean, his immediate reaction is, I can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
I can write a sales letter like that. But, I mean, there's more to it, and what I think Michael does is valuable, I think you do in your course is valuable, is it's not just the formula. The formula helps because that's like the bones, right?
Yeah, that's the foundation for it.
But if you're doing it and you got those steps, okay, let me give you a concrete example. I have the push-button letter software, so it walks you through the formula step by step, but the problem I have or the challenge I have with it is this. I'm like, you know, put your 1, 2, 3 bonuses here for the reason stack today.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is people type out a one-sentence bonus, like invariably, and even though on the audio I tell them not to. It's like a one-sentence statement of the bonus isn't enough to build value for it. And the problem is they just see that you can paint by numbers, but still to be an artist, you got to really understand it. And I think that's the value of what Michael does. That's the value in your course. That's the value in studying the swipe files, is really being able to put the flesh on the bones.
You know, my thinking is, and you guys jump in and tell me I'm completely full of it, because we haven't talked about this beforehand. Actually, we haven't really talked about any of the questions we're talking about on this call, so it's going to be pretty freewheeling. You know, my thinking is, you know, the formulas, and I love the formulas because I work a lot from formulas too, just like you do, Marlon, you're talking about it. I think the big idea usually transcends almost any kind. You know, you can have a big idea that really works, and you can have semi-crappy copy.
An example of a big idea that really worked for you, Yannick.
Okay. Well, I mean, when I have a big idea, though, you know, I also understand copywriting, so I can put two and two together.
Yeah.
But I'll give you an example of a big idea.
Let's do this. What was your first big idea?
The first one, actually.
When you put it in a letter and it hit really big, you're like, oh, my gosh.
Probably the first, well, the one that wasn't a huge hit, but it was the first one that actually made me see that I could write words on paper and people sent me money back was going to dermatologists and cosmetic surgeons and helping them grow their practice, selling a kit. And the big idea behind that was one of the things that we gave them was a pre-done toolkit with different pre-done ads and letters and postcards and other things that they could use to market, you know, liposuction or laser resurfacing or other techniques. And that was actually one of the bonuses, and that's all they wanted.
Well, yeah, and that's what you taught at your seminar, is the one of your big ideas there was the fish product.
Exactly.
So that was the fish product, or at least as a bonus it was a fish. I don't know if it's a full fish or not.
Yeah.
Was it a full fish or a half fish?
It was probably at least some sushi. But yeah, that is a big idea. It's giving people the fish. So having a big idea, and you know, another big idea, the same deal. The fish product is we have a product that we sell called Public Domain Goldmine, where we actually find these public domain works in a bunch of different niches and hand it to people along with spreadsheets and other things like that. Now, even if I wrote a crappy sales letter for it, I think that would have sold.
Yeah. Well, let's ask Michael. Michael, what example of the big idea in the letters you've done sticks out as this is something that would be really illustrative to explain to people?
Very often, a big idea can be the one huge benefit, the big promise, the one claim, the one thing that gets people to, you know, people in the lather and wanting to buy your product. I think that if people understand, when you put a sales letter down, you can write about all the values and all the virtues and all the benefits, but there's that one thing that drives not only the sales letter, the force of the sales letter, the impact of the sales letter, but also it's the thread. It's like, you know, I call it like rivets. It ties in the entire story together. John Carlton, he calls it the hook.
Mm-hmm.
My big idea for me is that one thing that's different and special or unique or can be made unique, and you can actually manufacture your unique sales position. I prefer position rather than proposition, because you're positioning yourself around that big idea. That big idea is what hinges the entire sales letter.
Anything comes to mind for you?
Like an example, yeah.
Here's an example. Whenever I wrote copy for, there was this one guy in particular who wrote an info product on how to build muscle mass. And there's actually really, it was bad copy. It was pretty good copy already, but it was a little confusing. There was no big idea. The whole concept of the book was how to lose weight and gain muscle mass.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a before and after picture of this guy who was like a weakling. He was like, 130-some pounds. And then he went on to, 280 pounds, but it was pure muscle mass. And he did it like in 12 weeks or something. I mean, not how he is today, but I think he gained about 40 or something like pounds
mm-hmm.
in only 12 weeks. And the people that he was targeting, of course, were people who were into weight training and bodybuilding. The process of thinking, or the biggest doubt, is that it's impossible. You cannot gain, I don't know, whatever it is, 40 pounds in 12 weeks with just pure muscle mass without, for example, steroids. So the big idea was not necessarily the fact that he can make you gain muscle mass and all that stuff. The hook was that this weakling, this 135-pound scrawny little guy, made that jump with no steroids, no diets, no fad diets, no bogus supplements, no pills, but with very specific strategies that he explains in his book. So the entire sales letter was hovering around that big idea, steroid-free muscle building. And that was the one that did very, very well after we did the rewrite.
And then the rewrite obviously encompassed the headline and all the way through, like you talked about the rivets is what you called it.
Yeah. Well, let me just quickly tell you my little tip here. It's like I love triads, because triads are like – I'm a big fan of formulas as well, but I love triads because it helps me remember stuff, especially when I write copy, is that there are three laws of human behavior, especially online. And the three laws are people will never read anything at first, people will never believe anything at first, and then people will never do anything at first.
I repeat that one more time.
Sure. People will never read anything at first. I mean, how many websites have you started reading from the very first letter at the very top of corner of your browser until the very last? It's nobody reads anything at first. You've got to grab their attention. The second is they never believe anything at first. They, you know, you could be a scam for all they know or all they care. And so you got to prove your case. And the third is they don't do anything at first. So you got to get them to act. It's not enough just to do some big sales letter that doesn't make an offer or doesn't tell them what to do. So here's my three steps. Pull them in, prove your case, push them to act. And I'll repeat that. Pull them in, prove your case, push them to act. And that is the three steps, the three elements that I keep in the back of my mind every time I write copy. When I reread my own copy, I've got to look at it from the perspective of, do I want to read this? Does it grab my attention? Do I believe this? do I understand what this person is saying? Is it meant for me? Am I qualified? And why should I buy? Why should I buy now? And that, a lot of that is reasons why advertising, as we talked about earlier. And the third is push them to act. Is there an offer? Does it compel me to whip out my wallet and enter my credit card number on the website, or if it's a direct mail piece, to fill out the form and mail it back or fax it in or whatever the case is? So if you keep those three in mind, you'll see a lot of sales letters these days are just crap, because you hit a website and you can immediately see that nothing is there to push you to enter the sales letter and start reading it. Well, I call it pull it in. Nothing is there to make you believe. I mean, a lot of stuff people just talk about is hype. It's just these big superlative words without any proof, without any backup. And then
if you just write something, then people automatically believe it
and
close to the truth.
And then the third one, which is push them to act, you wouldn't believe how many websites I critiqued where the author or the owner of the website has to actually make it hard for people to order from you. Not only is there a lack of an offer or an order form or even a summary or some kind of value buildup that leads to process where they can click on this button or fill out this form, whatever the case is, they just leave it out there expecting people to naturally want it so much that they're going to tear up the telephone or search that website for that order link, whatever the case is. You know, the thing is, people have a tendency to procrastinate, and if you don't make it easy for them to order from you, all you're doing is inviting procrastination. In fact, I truly believe that if you're targeting your market properly, if the market starts to read your sales letter, and let's say they're halfway, that means they're interested in your sales letter. They're already interested. They're already qualified. If they're not ordering by then, why? So your copy is really not to induce action per se. It's to prevent procrastination. It's because you have done something in your sales letter. You either have gone on a tangent. You know, there's a difference between long copy and long-winded copy. You know, long copy that advances the sale is different than copy that just goes off on 10 million tangents and the person gets so confused. You know, Randy Gage, very famous copywriter, he said this. He said, the confused mind never buys. The confused mind never always says no. So, you know, not taking people by the hand in your copy and leading them to the ordering process, you're just, you know, you're losing sales. You're actually leaving money on the table. So keeping those three things in mind and the three rivets that ties it all together, that's my skeleton, so to speak. But the three rivets is the story, the whole storyline, the hook, the big idea, the USP, the one thing that's unique that you can, you know, that drives the entire sales letter, the big benefit, the big promise. And the third is the proof, elements of proof, stories about proof, testimonials, case studies, things that will get people to realize that this is truly authentic, genuine, and it's really there. It's a blessing for me as a reader. If I buy this product, it's going to change my life, whatever the case is. And those three, I call them the rivets.
Yeah.
But if you mix them all together, then you can come up with a really cool sales copy that's proven to sell.
Very good. Yeah. Let's start at the beginning. Even before we get into headlines, because that's, you know, a lot of times where people want to jump right in.
Before you do that, I just want to give you one example, though, of your big hook.
Okay.
Because it involves you, and it's really a great story. You started a whole new section of publishing. You may not even know it. But when you develop the big idea of the instant with instant sales letters and instant, you got two or three or four instants. Have you been to the bookstore recently and looked in the business section?
No, I haven't.
Dude, there's a whole lot. You know how you got the Rich Dad Poor Dad books and you got the Dummies books and you got the Idiots books? There's a whole entire line of business books now called Instant.
Really?
Instant promotions, instant this, instant that, and every single domain on the internet you can buy that's called Instant is gone.
Yeah.
That has to do with business, and which is a great point that if you really get a big idea, personally, I would register like every domain surrounding it.
Yeah, that's true. I should have done that. Actually,
but
Missy
had. You started
had...
a whole. Dude, I'm serious. You got to go to the bookstore and check out like a Barnes & Noble or Borders. There's like a whole line of instant books now. And so talk about a big idea. You're supporting a whole a whole section of the bookstore.
Well, I'm going to have to take my photo with it and be hang it up on my wall and be proud of it, or cry about it because I didn't do it.
One of the two, right?
Yeah. No, it does transcend. Like, you know, Missy has her website called Instant Thank You Letters, and so that totally transcends because it's a big idea. You're absolutely right. Let's start at the beginning, and I was going to say we're going to start with headlines, but even before that, you know, before we even write one word of copy, what do you guys do as far as research, trying to find out what hot buttons are for people, what for prospects, what the
well,
benefits
when
are
I
be?
Was writing for Walter, like my best headline for him, by the way, was how a little short guy terrified of selling started a business at home from scratch and made $7-8 million. That letter did pretty good. when I started writing for him, of course, he sold his last business was selling marketing to dentists, so that's the business I did most of the writing for. They had the number one training company in the dental industry.
Oh, yeah, really?
I don't know if they still do because Walter passed away last year, but they were endorsed by every major dentist. But anyway, but what I did was I just inundated myself talking to all the dentists. I had
one. You would get on the phone with dentists?
No, I went to the boot camps because they did boot camps. Actually, they have a proprietary right to the word boot camp in the dental industry. Nobody else in the dental industry can do boot camps.
Huh.
They have a trademark by issue of being famous, and they enforce it. So anyway, if you see any boot camps in the dental industry, it's their company doing it. So what I did was I would go to their boot camps and talk to the dentists in depth. I talked to dentists that have been in the business 20 years. You find out what the two main things, Yannick, is you got to know what people love and you got to know what they hate.
Mm-hmm.
You got to know what they love and you got to know what they hate. It's said that if you know what people love and you know what they hate, that you can control anyone in the world. Don't know if that's true or not, but it probably is. But I just inundated myself. I can tell you the psychology of dentists. I know how they got to be a dentist. I know what they wanted to do before they became a dentist. I know what they're afraid of. I know their suicide rate. I can tell you everything just about there is to know psychologically about dentists. I can tell you what they're afraid of. I can tell you what they dream about. You know, that's if you were going to write really great copy. Of course, for most people, they're already in a target audience, probably related to who they are. So they already know those things. But if you're coming in as a copywriter from the outside, you know, I think you inundate yourself in it.
Yeah. Michael?
Well, David Garfinkel, a good friend of ours, actually, said something that was really powerful. He talks about two things, and those are the two things that I try to learn as much as I possibly can when I research my target market. It's what's the problem? And I know that sounds simple, but do you know what the real problem is? When people say, oh, I have this problem, on the surface, it looks good. It's like a look-good type of problem, or it's the immediate knee-jerk, here's what the problem is. But then there's a second question is, how do they talk about it? And that's important because even though you might have an audience that might have a problem, let's say, with insomnia, you know, writing a book and writing sales copy that caters to the insomniac is not going to do you well. In fact, I did a rewrite for a client that exactly had that kind of a book, and the sales copy was all about insomnia and how to cure insomnia and all that stuff. People don't talk about it like that. What people talk about is feeling lethargic, feeling depressed, losing their jobs because they weren't productive at work. You know, a lot of times when people might feel they're getting 10 hours of sleep at night, but if they're in, you know, if they suffer from, for example, sleep apnea, where they're constantly awake all the time, where they keep waking up throughout the entire night, it's worse than getting, you know, no sleep at all. You better to have 4, 5, 6 hours of strong, deep sleep rather than 10 hours of half sleep. Anyways, I can go on, but the process or the thinking process that people go through is, they don't talk about insomnia per se. They'll say, oh, I feel sluggish today, or, oh, my gosh, I got into a huge fight with my wife because I was so tired, or you know, people, for example, being scared of driving their cars for fear that they fall asleep. You know, how do they talk about the problem? And that's the key, because the sales copy needs to talk to them at an intimate, personal level. It's not about curing insomnia. It's about giving them back energy, about make sure that they keep their jobs and maybe be more productive at their jobs, how to increase the passion in their relationships or the family life and the communication level with their kids, because they're not so darn tired all the time. And that's the point, is what I research is what, not only what the problem is, but what is the real problem and then how do they talk about it. And I have a series of questionnaires that I give my client, and that will also give me a springboard to start doing more research on, not because I don't trust my client, but the client who hire me to write copy will tell me what the problem is from their perspective.
Right.
I want to see, I want to hear, I want to learn, I want to research how their audience talks about their problem. So what I do is I'll do some search, whether it's on the internet or in books or the library, whatever the case is, and I'll find out what are some of the things that happen and talked about. And, I mean, gosh, there's even an Insomniacs Anonymous kind of organization.
Michael, I've also seen you use that research in your sales letters, do you not? It seems like I've read letters where you don't just use the words, but you actually quote research that you've obtained.
Oh, absolutely. That's the proof element, the one of those three rivets I mentioned earlier. Because what you can do is you can actually incorporate factoids to prove your case. But like you were talking about earlier, Marlon, you said, you know, that's skeleton. You want to add meat to your copy, and the meat is the story that binds it all together. And the story has to talk at their level. Don't try to say, well, insomnia is the leading cause of heart attacks. And who cares about that? But they want to know how to increase their vigor, their vibrancy, their energy. But then you can back it up. You know, it goes back to what Zig Ziglar said. Whenever he said in selling that people buy on emotion first and then they justify their decisions with logic, it's no different than selling in print. Selling in print, you got to sell with emotions first, and then you back it up with logic. And very often, the facts and all the statistics and data you incorporate in your copy not only makes you more believable, but they're actually going to use that to justify their own rationale behind buying your product, which is actually emotionally driven.
I try and use that rationale whenever I'm trying to convince my wife about buying a new exotic car.
And and actually that terminology that Michael was talking about, Yannick, you can really identify, like, what's the terminology that people use that caused their hockey team to lose the championship? Like, what would that language be?
It was the semifinals, but...
Oh, okay. I guess you were mumbling about high-sticking late at night.
Yeah, high-sticking, sitting in the penalty box over a bad call that the referee made. Yeah, no, absolutely, and there's definitely language there. A couple things I want to add to everything you guys said. A couple things that I look for. One is if somebody else had already existing results, or even if I have existing results, like old ads or previous promotions run, because you can tell a lot about which ads have been successful and which ones haven't been, because the ones that are successful usually have a germ of a big idea or that big benefit or something in there that would really hit the prospect and got them to respond. Other things that I really look at really carefully are objections. And before I write a single word, I'm always trying to figure out what is going to be the objection, and also what is going to be the, I don't know, what is the figure speech, you know? Is it a pink elephant? Is it a purple elephant? The big elephant sitting in the room? What is that figure speech? You know what I'm talking about, where nobody wants to talk about the if there's a big elephant sitting in the room?
I heard
it
before, but I can't remember right now.
I thought it maybe skeleton in the closet.
Well, that's one figure speech.
I don't know about an elephant in your room.
Maybe I'm thinking of... Well, regardless, let's say there was a big pink elephant in a hoity-toity affair, and nobody wanted to talk about the pink elephant. And that's the same thing with a really prominent objection, is that they don't want to talk about it.
Well, do you ever fear bringing up an objection in the sales letter, Yannick, or how do you do it? Because let me tell you a quick story. You know, when I was doing the freelance writing in the daytime and selling at night, I had this a lot of sales jobs. One of them was selling timeshare. And, man, every stupid couple that came in or guy or gal that came in, they all had the same objection of, well, I like to camp. I don't want to stay in timeshare hotels and stuff. and it's driving me crazy. Make a long story short, I realized that I kept bringing it up in what's called the front talk, and I kept talking about, well, do you like to camp? I kept mentioning camping, and I put it in their mind. And so later they just pulled it right back out as the objection. So my question is, are you ever afraid to bring up an objection?
I'm not afraid as long as I have a good counter for it. And what I was getting to is, like, people, like, if they're selling, I don't know, like, I saw, actually a perfect example is from the Underground seminar. The people that are listening to this might remember it, is the guy that walked up, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the gentleman's name, but he walked up, he had a real estate product, and it was actually an affiliate for something. And we just rattled off all these objections where, you know, he never wanted to face them up front in the copy, and that's what everyone is thinking as they're looking at this thing. They're thinking scam. They're thinking, you know, this will never work. I'm going to lose all my money. And another one was the young lady who came up who had the freebie site. And remember, she was giving away, like, free iPods and different things like that. That's even a better example I think I saw a recent incarnation of her site, and it has up on there, why can I give away these free iPods like we told her? And that's hitting the objection head on. And whatever people are going to be thinking of, you know, I always want to hit it head on, because we don't have that face-to-face opportunity for somebody to bring up the objection. So, yeah, maybe I might bring up one or two objections that they hadn't thought of, but it then becomes a more thorough and complete argument because I'm putting down those objections.
There's a famous saying by a friend of mine, Peter Stone, also a really great copywriter. He says that, you know, selling is the temporary suspension of disbelief. Well, in copywriting, it's he calls it this way, it's the temporary suspension of critical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, if you leave the reader at their own devices, they're going to have a tendency to look for all the negative stuff to justify their procrastination. Because of the fact that they're not face-to-face, because of the fact that you are just an electronic veil on a monitor. And like I said earlier, people never believe anything at first. Here's a little story just to give you an example. If you were to meet a salesperson and sit down with that salesperson, and that salesperson is impeccably dressed, well-groomed, very professional, speaks to you knowing their product or service, and gives you a sales presentation over, I don't know, dinner. And the whole meeting went perfectly well. The pitch was awesome. Everything was A+. But throughout the entire meeting, you couldn't help but notice a tiny little ketchup stain under his eye. Just a tiny little ketchup stain. Now, 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, whatever the case is, if I were to come back to you and say, what do you remember the most from that meeting? What would be the one thing that would pop into your mind? The ketchup stain.
Right.
Because people have a tendency to look for negatives in order to justify their reasons for procrastination because of fear. You know, if you understand psychology, and, you know, I don't want to go into Abraham Maslow's pyramid of needs and all that stuff, but people have a fear of loss. And parting with their money is not just losing the money itself, but losing the money in exchange for something that craps out on them. So they want to make sure that they're really investing in something that's going to come back to them. So they're looking for all the negative stuff. So if you don't hit that head on, if you don't cover all those bases, those objections. And here's another thing. When you're in front of a person in a sales situation, person to person, you know, face to face, or as in Japanese they say belly to belly, you have the ability to ask questions to find out the objections. You have the ability to pull out the objections. In copy, you don't have that luxury. So you need to cover all the bases. You need to answer all the objections, because even though your copy is speaking directly to one person, you're getting thousands of people reading your copy. So you need to cover all those bases. And, of course, like you said, Yannick, it's so important. You need to make sure that you have a good way to handle it, because just bringing an objection up and you don't really handle it well, now you've just planted a seed in their minds. And, of course, exactly like the ketchup stain, is that they're going to use that as a reason not to buy.
And just like Marlon's camping example. All right, well, let's speed this up a little, so I want to cover a lot more ground. Let's get into headlines. I mean, we can talk about that for probably an hour by ourselves, but but just a little, some quick tips. I mean, everyone's been taught, you know, headlines 80%, 85%, 90% of an ad. And, you know, my feeling is that I don't care, because obviously the percentage is very high, so the headline is very, very, very important. Who cares what the percentage is? What's some headline tips?
Well, you know, what I always do, is, and it's similar to just echoing what Michael had said earlier about, you know, the big promise, the number one thing. And there's first of all, there are different approaches and there's different formulas.
Right. I
like,
totally agree.
Carlton doesn't necessarily put the biggest benefit in the headline.
Yeah, sometimes
he will sometimes go for the most dramatic hook that's going to get him to read the letter.
Yep.
Like the one-legged golfer thing. I mean, it's one of the greatest ads maybe ever written, right?
Yep.
But that's really a high level of skill to do what he does. I just try to go for the in-your-face.
Because it can backfire on you pretty easily.
I mean, you're looking at Michael Jordan dunking the ball, and you're like, well, yeah, that looks easy.
Yeah.
Like, if I wrote the one-legged golfer thing, I'd probably have, like, every one-legged golfer in the world hopping at my door, you know, I mean, beating it down. So, it's a high level of skill. I just go for the kind of the brain-dead simple approach, Yannick, which is, you know, what's the really big benefit that they want, and you try to articulate it as a result. However, I got something that, remember, Yannick, a couple weeks ago you told me to buy those Wealth Attraction DVDs by Dan Kennedy?
Right.
So I bought those things, and he says one of the most profound things I've ever heard on there, but it takes like a day of setup for you to really get the big wow. So saying it on this call won't do it justice. But he has this thing about that people want to buy a miracle. And it's not that you lie, it's not that you misrepresent, but if you can ask yourself, what's the miracle that this product creates, and articulate that in the headline, you're really close to writing a great headline.
I would look at it from the perspective of there's a happy medium. There is, you know, you can sell the miracle, but if you exaggerate too much, or if you don't explain it too much, and this goes back to reasons why advertising, your big promise will be discounted immediately, unless it goes on the other side of things where it is too sensational, but sensational enough that gets people, you know, their curiosity glands tickled. To me, a headline is meant to do one thing, is to just get people to start reading the darn copy.
Mm-hmm.
I've tested this. I'm a fanatical tester, and I'm sort of part copywriter, part statistician. And I realized that the biggest bottleneck in copy is the headline. Dan Kennedy once said that that there are ample empirical studies that prove that readership drops off dramatically at the beginning of a sales letter and at the end of a sales letter. What does that mean? It means that the headline is where the bottleneck is, because once they start reading the copy, they won't come. They'll read the whole thing, especially if they're targeted. And so you can pull from that the fact that the people were targeted in the first place, and if they're not targeted, they won't read 300 words, much less 3,000 words. But
yeah, the readership stats I saw, Michael, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you've seen different, is first 500 words, and then next drop off is at next 5,000 words.
Yeah, that's it. That's what he said. And that, what you can pull from that is that the headline is the biggest bottleneck. And so I try to find a happy medium. Like, if I were to say, you know, how to lose 40 pounds in just 6 weeks.
Right.
That is, it's simple, it's straightforward, but there's no oomph, and it also could be easily discredited, because a lot of people say, what's the catch?
Yeah.
You can say, you could add proof to that. You can be more believable. Or you could be more unbelievable, like I said, you could be on the other side, but enough to cause people to scratch their heads. Just like, for example, how to lose 40 pounds in just 6 weeks by just performing one simple, I wouldn't say the word exercise, but one small activity every day that only takes 30 seconds, dot, 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 dot. And once you find out what it is, you'll kick yourself for not having started this sooner. Now, that, and people will read that, oh, my gosh, not only will I learn how to lose 40 pounds in just 6 weeks, but it's just one little activity a day that takes 30 seconds. Wow, I wonder what that is. You get people curious and pushed in or pulled into the sales letter, which is the whole point about the fact that people never read anything at first. You need to get their attention. And so I use headlines like that. Here's another little quick example is I've heard from Clayton Makepeace that he's talking about that recently – sales letters that have lost their luster are usually those that are benefit-driven in the headline. And I didn't really understand that at first, but what he says is that when you're too benefit-driven in the headline,
mm-hmm.
people will automatically sense that this is a sales letter. So rather than using that, be more of a newsworthy headline, or if you're going to put the big promise, the big idea in the headline,
mm-hmm.
to back it up with something that's newsworthy. So here's an example. Rather than saying, how to lose 40 pounds in just 6 weeks, you can change that around and say, you're only one hamburger away from having a massive heart attack. That will cause people to be pulled into the sales letter to find out, Or here's how to find out if you're one hamburger away from a massive heart attack. And my point, and you can still drive, you can still add benefits in your headline, sometimes included with the newsy aspect of it. But some people, and this is the one thing I'm seeing so much on the internet these days, is these benefits that are so generic and so far-fetched that it causes people to immediately discount and discredit what they're reading. You know, how to explode traffic to your website, how to
make your traffic counter explode.
Yeah, how to shove more money into your bank account. Whatever.
Right.
And that's just ho-hum stuff. Now it is ho-hum stuff. And when people see that nowadays, they say, this is crap. You know, this is BS. But if I say, you know, for example, rather than saying, how to explode your website traffic without any advertising,
mm-hmm.
I say this. Discover why major web host is up in arms after Buzz causes little website to create a huge server bottleneck.
Well, you know, a book that Yannick mentioned earlier, Michael, and I'm sure, and I think maybe you mentioned it, but a guy that does a brilliant job of addressing what you're talking about, even though it's an old book, is Breakthrough Advertising by Eugene
yep.
Swartz.
Yeah, Michael mentioned
that. I mean, because there's this natural progression that a marketplace goes through in terms of consciousness. Like when you first come into a market, make your traffic explode, everybody buys.
Yep.
And then the next natural progression is the fastest way
yep.
or the easiest way. It goes into a superlative.
Yep.
And then the next progression after that, Swartz said, was that it goes into what's called a mechanism. A mechanism is like some kind of thing. You know, it's like the purple pill or some kind of thing that makes the traffic explode. So it becomes some kind of new software, something or the other, that makes your traffic explode. So anyway, a market has different stages of awareness that he taught, and that you have to really know what stage the marketplace is in to write a headline. It's kind of an advanced technique because, to be honest, most beginners, they can't even figure out what a benefit is to put in their headline. So, but for the people that have a little bit higher skill level, I really recommend studying, you know, Swartz's approach to the awareness and consciousness of the marketplace.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
I'm going to mention something very, very quickly, and just to back it up, I was mentioning earlier at the call an acronym that I've created. It's really based on Gene Schwartz's process. I call it OATH. Are your prospects ready to take an oath? And it's an acronym that stands for oblivious, apathetic, thinking, and hurting. And what it means is your market oblivious about the fact that they have a problem in the first place? The second is they're apathetic. They know they have a problem, but they don't care. They don't want to solve it. And the third one is that they're thinking about it, so they're shopping around. And then the last one is they're hurting. They're ready to buy now. They really want that solution. So I tend to use copy that caters to what level of awareness. And, yeah, you're right, Marlon. It does take a little bit more of a skill level.
Well, but what I think you do really well, Michael, as well as anyone I can think of on the Internet, is your copy, depending on the market you're selling to, you really do a great job of adjusting not just the headline but also the tone of the copy to that market. And it's a really hard thing, I think, for copywriters that come to the Internet from offline. Yeah, there's a lot of similarities, but there's also differences. And one of those differences is there's a different consciousness on the Internet, and especially depending on which market, which segment of the Internet you're selling to. And what I think you do in your copy that's really brilliant is the Internet overall, I think, tends to be a lot more skeptical marketplace, although you could argue offline is really no different. But I think you do a really great job in your stuff with your factoids, with your approach and the way you do it, of addressing that skepticism of the marketplace.
Yeah, and that was the next thing I wanted to get to is proof elements, because they
yeah.
are so critical. Like you said, Marlon, I agree that I think people online are more skeptical just because of, you know, the stories of, you know, people's credit cards being ripped off,
right,
or all this stuff, you know, that makes news still, but it happens all the time in the offline world.
Sometimes these online people, they're really cynical and really skeptical, and if you don't address that, you know, your copy just doesn't sell.
Yeah, so let's talk about some real powerful proof elements and maybe how to get them. Who would like to go first on that?
Michael can go first, it's fine.
Okay, well, here's the thing that I tend to look for or tend to try to add proof about is anything that can help a benefit be one of three things: quantifiable,
mm-hmm,
measurable, and time-bound. Now, quantifiable is that, of course, you're making it specific. No, saying that your system helped me make a lot of money on it means squat.
It's good, but nowhere near as good as,
exactly,
what it could be.
And it's not as believable. But if,
yeah,
I say your system helped me make $1,464.92,
yeah,
now that's a bit more believable, but I try to add the other elements as much as I can. If I'm a millionaire, $1,000 is a drop in the bucket.
Yep.
And so I would say I was dead broke. I just came out of a bankruptcy, and I needed a way to make money right away. And lo and behold, I came across the Onyx system, and I made $1,465.92, whatever. And I put it time-bound, meaning in 3 weeks. Because a lot of people say, yeah, you made $1,400 in what, a year? And those are the three elements. And any proof element that can back up any one of those three may be, like, for example, a bank deposit scan, a check scan.
Yeah.
Or, you know, for example, one of the things that I do often is turning testimonials into case studies, because it adds those three elements. If I say, you know, a Yonex system was great, blah, 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 I made so much money with it, blah, 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 but then you turn it into a case study, I tend to put a little story out, and I usually preface my testimonials with, John was dead broke whenever he first went online. In fact, he had to declare bankruptcy and didn't know where his next rent check was coming from. And after surfing the Internet for so long, he discovered Yonex system, and he was very skeptical but decided to take a crack at it. In fact, he had to borrow money from his wife or neighbor or whatever to buy the system, and so on and so forth. And then you say, and here's what here's are his results. I've done that, for example, with John Reese's Traffic Secrets letter. If you go to John Reese's Traffic Secrets, all the new testimonials we've added at the very top end are all case studies, really. They're not necessarily testimonials. And
now, how do you get those, Michael?
Well, you ask for them, first of all. You know.
Right, but if you ask for it, I mean, there's different ways of asking. I mean, if I ask for a testimony, I'm going to get Michael is great and he helped me make a lot of money.
I'm actually conducting a survey on the results that my product creates. And in order to improve it, especially to make sure that you, Mr. Customer, are getting the kinds of results that I promised you, would you be able to give me some feedback? And with a little note at the bottom that says, may I have your permission to reproduce your notes, to reproduce your feedback?
Yeah.
You know, and then they say, yeah, I've made that much money. Can you send me a screenshot of your PayPal account, or can you do this? If you are selling a weight loss product or some nutritional supplement, can you send me a before and after picture? Whatever the case is. Now, that's one. Factoids and facts and statistics and data, not just on the solution itself, but also on the problem. So especially if your marketplace is at a level of awareness where they don't fully appreciate the problem. Well, if you, for example, say, you know, you're one major hamburger away from a massive heart attack, people will look at it and say, right, sure, I don't care. But if you talk about the leading causes of cancer or massive heart attacks or by, you know, hamburger meat, whatever the case is, and you actually provide medical studies and, you know, you don't want to go into a big, you don't want to, you know, you're writing a sales letter. You're not writing a product specification data sheet or something like that. But you want to provide ample proof that way. So I try to do research that backs anything up. Anything that I say, can I back it up in some way and somehow? There's also the element of social proof, which is something that Robert Cialdini talked about in his book, Influence. And social proof is simply this, is that if everybody else is doing it, then I should do it too. I mean, it must be good. It must be credible because everybody else is doing it. So if you can back it up with some way that shows other people are buying this product, you know, a lot of times, I'll give you an example on John Reese's Traffic Secrets. Rather than putting a picture of John at the top of a sales letter, we took a picture of John speaking at a seminar where after the seminar was over, the crowd was just literally all,
yeah,
you know, around him.
That's a great photo.
Exactly. That's social proof. Pictures like that. One of the biggest things that I've learned through cosmetic surgery, and you've probably learned that as well in your background, Yannick, is the power of the before and after. And before and afters.
But you can use it in so many different ways.
Oh, gosh, yeah. You can use it in copy. You can use it with pictures. You can use it with scans. And when I wrote John Ashraf's copy for The Street Kid, John Ashraf is a motivational speaker, but his background is he was an adolescent thug, and he was hanging around with drug dealers and all that stuff. And there's a picture of the apartment complex, which was an old rundown, graffiti-ridden apartment complex with a beat-up old Toyota parked in front. We put that picture there, and then, you know, fast forward, you know, 20 years, 30 years later, there's a picture of his huge mansion that he owns on an island in Hawaii.
And well, now Rancho Santa Fe.
You got it. And that's what I'm saying is the before and after picture. I wrote copy for a guy who sells lighting fixtures. And the lighting itself, the light bulbs, are specifically created to replicate sun rays. And I'm not a scientist. I'm not going to go into the discourse of how he did it. But here's what we've done. We put regular light bulbs in this room's lighting system, and we took a picture of the room, and we put his light bulbs in, and we took a picture of the room, and it was a huge difference.
Interesting.
And we put the before and after on his website in the copy that I wrote for him.
Yeah, that's great. Those are great examples, because before and after, I think, are it's tremendously underused. People only think it can be used in the weight loss industry or cosmetic type stuff, and that's not true. Marlon, what do you got for proof elements?
Well, a couple things, two things, major things really on it. Number one is on the internet in a hyper-competitive marketplace, one of the biggest breakthroughs in sales letters tends to be new methods of proof, like exactly what Michael's talking about, using case studies versus doing this.
Yeah.
I remember when video testimonials were a big breakthrough.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember when just sticking a photo in there. So it's a fast-moving marketplace. Fortunately, offline doesn't move quite as fast as the online world does. And if you're in a niche online, using any proof is probably revolutionary. And I'm going to give some basics, but the big mistake, a lot of things – these things in a fast-moving marketplace, you really got to be, the nimble and the quick win, right? But in a lot of niches, they're a lot slower moving. I mean, none of the competitors even have sales letters at all.
Exactly.
Like, just today, I saw a product I really was interested in buying. And, like, I could take a long, slow flash demo, but there was no sales letter at all. There wasn't a sales letter. I'm like, I don't have time to do a flash demo. Right? I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've wanted to buy something, even sometimes it's stuff that's pretty expensive, and they don't even have a sales letter. Like, you got one choice, fill out a form and talk to a sales rep. I'm like, I don't have time to talk to a sales rep, and I don't want to talk to a sales rep. I want a sales letter.
Well, it doesn't even need to be a sales letter in the context. It needs to be just something that...
The data, features, and benefits, for goodness sake.
The bullet, the headline.
So the second thing I've got is it's hard to improve on some of what John Caples, Swart, and Vic Schwab did, specifically Victor Schwab in How to Write a Good Advertisement, a short course on copywriting, which is a $10 book that everybody who's anybody in this business has read.
Great book.
Specifies four types of evidence, and it's hard to improve on it. Number one, there's construction evidence, and there's seven types of construction evidence. And if you're going to write copy, you need to know what those are. Number two, there's performance evidence, and there's four types of performance evidence: achievement of product, discriminating or well-known users, increasing popularity, and demonstration reasons. Number three, there's testimony of others, and there's four different types of testimony of others. And then number four, there's test evidence, and there's two different types of test evidence. Those are really the basics of the evidence, and Yannick, in your course, in mysalesletters.com, in your course specifically, you go through all of those types of evidence there, and you give the swipe ball. You give a lot of examples of them, and you really hammered that home, I thought, effectively in your course.
Yeah, I think proof is huge. Actually, by the way, that was a really big – I don't remember. You weren't there, right, Fortin, at Bensavango's seminar?
No.
Yeah, Garrett Bensavango's, you know, one of the greatest living copywriters, and that was one of his big, huge – breakthroughs. I mean, it sounds so simple, right? Just more proof. But he did proof for everything, and I try and really follow it. If I put something, this is going to be good for a service business, then I want a testimonial right for a service company, or I want to have a testimonial backing up an objection, so countering that. So anything you can do with the proof is really powerful.
I mean, online, you really got to go overboard. Like in my 1in102.com, how we got 1 out of every 102 people basically speak English in the world to go to one of our websites. which is sounds an incredible claim. So we went way overboard on the proof. I mean, we showed all the unique visitors from Web Trends Live over a period of like 5 years. I showed this, I showed that. I gave every – we dug through 6-7 years of data and gave every single kind of proof we could because it's kind of an unbelievable claim.
Interesting.
And so I think the Bob Serling used to have this interesting technique – And Bob's a very good direct response copywriter. What Bob would do is he would give the most powerful promise that he was able to defend, right, that he was able to prove and defend, even if it was a little bit unbelievable, because right under the promise or above the promise, he would always have at least three testimonials supporting it. And sometimes in the headline, right below the headline, he would state what his proof was. And in the letter, when he made a really almost unbelievable promise or a little, I don't know about that, the very first thing in the letter then he would hit on would be the proof.
Yeah, that's real powerful. One other quick technique I want to share with people is believable bonuses. I think that actually is a way of building proof. Like,
what do you mean?
Well, you'll see a lot of sites that have bonuses that are listed. Let's say the product's a $49 ebook and their bonuses are $5,000. Yeah, $5,000, right? I mean, how that just shatters your credibility, any kind of proof you were building before that. And so, you know, you want believable bonuses, and I think that's one thing that people.
But you know, it is sometimes a lot of that's how you position it. Like, I have a classic J. Abraham sales letter where he builds a $40,000 value for one audio tape, but he spends that he's going to give you as a bonus, but he spends 3 pages to do it.
Okay.
Spends 3 pages building the value for something he's going to give you as a bonus.
That's powerful.
But see, yeah, I mean, he starts out, I traded a quarter. There was this company who was the leader in their industry for 20 years. I traded him $250,000 of my consulting time just so I could spend 8 hours interviewing the CEO of the company. We sat down. It was the most intense 8 hours interview I ever spent with somebody in my life. I hired the single best audio editor in the entire audio industry to go through it, edit it down ruthlessly to 3 hours, and then I went through it and took that 3 hours and cut it down to the best 90 minutes when, you know, we got it on audio tape. He takes 3 pages to explain it. But by the end of it, you've got to have the audio tape.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, you've got to have it.
That's powerful.
So the bonus.
That's actually a good segue into how we get people that to action, and that's where we'll wrap it up for
right.
The Q&A. And obviously bonuses drive sales. Like I talked about way at the beginning of the call was that the bonus we did for the cosmetic surgeons, the little pre-done toolkits, that drove the sale. This bonus that you're talking about for Jay Abraham with this tape, I mean, just the way you just explained it, my curiosity has peaked, and I want that thing.
It's a great tape.
So, let's
talk
about,
I fell for it, hook, line, and sinker.
Let's talk about some ways of closing the sale, getting people to action, because I see a lot of times that, you know, people can get a halfway decent headline, they get some pretty decent bullets and so on, they build up sometimes a decent amount of value in the offer, and it just falls apart when it's time to take action. So, Michael, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, here's my take, and I'm going back again to Dan Kennedy, who's been a mentor of mine, and I'm sure of yours, Yannick. But
oh, huge, yeah.
So he talked about apples to oranges comparisons.
Yeah.
You know, people fully you have to understand there's a difference between the investment that people are making versus the ultimate cost of not investing in that thing, not the price of a thing versus the price of something else. And so when you build value, especially when you're leading up to the close, to the transition, I need to compare the investment, not the price, the investment, which is minuscule, compared to the ultimate end cost. And there's a difference between price and cost. And, you know, the thing is that when you say, for example, invest in my $47 ebook, and people will say, well, there's a lot of other ebooks out there. When they say, for example, listen, the strategies that I talked about, and this goes back to proof as well, the strategies that I talk about in my ebook are things that I've actually went through a lot of trial and error to learn. In fact, I went bankruptcy and I went bankrupt and I actually lost, I don't know, trying out strategies that led me to this one strategy. I lost over, I don't know, $500,000, $50,000, whatever the case is. Now, I'm not saying that I'm stopping you from learning, stopping you from losing that kind of money. I can't even guarantee you're going to make money. But here's what I'm saying is that if you invest in my $47 ebook, you're not just, you know, making a $47 investment. You're actually investing in something that took me, you know, $50,000 to learn and over 8 years to learn, and or something that if you don't apply could potentially lose you money down the road of X number of dollars if you don't apply this one strategy that I reveal in my ebook, whatever the case is. So you're saying, for example, some of the strategies that you will apply could potentially triple your conversion rate on your sales letter. Now, if you look at your sales letter and how much it's making right now, think about if you were to triple that. And let's say you don't make the investment today. In a couple of years down the road, or even just a couple of months, how much money would you have actually be losing if you'd invest in my $47 ebook? That's the power of building value and leading up to the close. Because once they get to that closing action, that closing question, you know, click here to buy now, whatever the case is, or in direct mail, please fill out this form and order now. The idea is that they fully appreciate the ultimate cost of not going ahead today. And again, it comes back down to my original point earlier that people, especially when they read up to that point, they're already interested. So it's not really to induce action. Now your job is really to prevent procrastination, because now they're going to find every excuse not to buy, and that's where you have to build value and build it up until the close.
Right, and when I talk about apples to oranges, I love that too. I do that a lot. And for some reason, people want to play fair. Like my favorite example is this little silly site that I have called Get Fit While You Sit, and it's a little ebook, sells for $19.95, I think. And what I compare that ebook to, I compare it to buying a Nordic Track, which costs $1,000 that just sits in your bedroom and use it as a clothes rack, or I compare it to going to the gym, and then that ebook is actually written by a personal trainer, and then I compare what it costs to hire a personal trainer, and most people use them 3 times a week and so on, and I add that up, what it costs, you know, it's $50 an hour times 3, that's $150 times a month, that's $600, and then I show them, hey, it's only $19.95 for this ebook, and all of a sudden, you know, the value is way up there. I don't compare it to like a Denise Austin Buns of Steel type thing, or which is $20. So that's definitely one way of getting people to action. What else do you have, Marlon?
Well, first of all, that concept that you talk about, I call dollars for dimes, and selling dollars for dimes. And I actually got 3 points here. Number one is when you write your sales letter, multiply the price of it by 10, and don't write a sales letter for the low price product. You got to write the sales letter for the product that costs 10 times more. And then you drop the price at the end of the sales letter. If you think of it that way, I'm not selling a $100 product, I'm selling a $1,000 product, you'll write a lot better letter.
Interesting. That's a great technique.
Yeah, number two is I tell this story at seminars. It's called the Scruffy Story, and it's like little Jimmy and Susie, you know, they want this puppy dog that they see, and the parents won't let him take him home. So the parents are the people are like, oh, just take Scruffy home for the weekend, you know, blah, 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 blah. And he's the worst. They take him home. He's the worst dog in the history of the world. Pees on the carpet, tears down the curtain, rips up the sofa. They're going to take him back. Jimmy and Susie are screaming and crying. You know, the person who lets him take the puppy dog home will never see the puppy dog again. And it's pretty much true with any product that if you can give people a trial of it, or at least take the attitude of take the car for a test drive. Every salesperson knows if you can get the person to try on the shoes in the shoe store, take the car for a test drive, the chances they're going to like it. The third point
One quick second on that one.
Yep,
you have a great line, actually, and I might bastardize it when I mention it again, but isn't it something like don't make a decision now, or don't decide now?
Don't decide now. I forget how I usually state it, but it's like, don't decide now, you know, just take don't decide now if you want little Scruffy, you know, take little Scruffy home for the weekend, let Jimmy and Susie play with him, and here's a dog food bowl dish and some dog food and some toys, and if Jimmy and Susie ain't happy with him, bring him back, you know, no problem, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, you tell them that they're taking the product for a test drive.
Yeah. Hey,
you know, buy the product today. That's a decision. You don't want them to make a decision. People associate decisions with mistakes and pain.
Yep.
It's like, don't make a decision. Don't decide now if the product's you're taking for a test drive. Just see how it works for you. Give it a spin. Give it a whirl. See, now they're not making a decision.
Yep. Yeah.
They've made the decision ultimately by procrastination.
Right. We use human inertia.
Yeah, but the last one I have is really the best, one of the best stories is back. So here I am, the copywriter in the daytime, and a lot of my passion for teaching this stuff, Jan, it comes from like all the bad experiences I had and the pain I went through learning it. So that's why I determined to save people the pain and the struggle and the time that I went through to learn a lot of this stuff. So here I am, I'm a freelance writer in the daytime. I got another job I had at night after I got fired from timeshare sales, which is 100% commission job and impossible to get fired from. But I managed to get fired from it. So after that, I'm like doing telemarketing for this dating service. Now there's a really gigantic girl there. She's a real sweetheart, but she's huge. So anyway, she'd be talking to guys to get them to come down. Hey, come down and have a salad with me. And they'd be like, so what do you look like? Oh, I'm 5'6", 110 pounds and all this stuff. She's like gigantic. So they'd show up and they'd be like, yeah, well, I'm here to see Susan. And they're like, well, Susan's with the customer right now, but Bob will take you in what we literally called the hot box, which was the closing room, and rip your arms and legs off until you buy. But So the people who joined this thing and paid a lot of money to join this dating service, we got a Christmas party. Now you got to say, they paid like $3,000 to join the dating service. The Christmas party's $20. We're in the telemarketing room hammering out calls for a week, and we've sold 3 tickets. And the Christmas party's in a week. We can't sell any tickets. The manager comes into the telemarketing and says, okay, the next part, we got to sell this thing out. The next person that says, how many tickets do you have left to the party? I want you to say 2, and I'm pretty sure Barbara over here is about to sell one of them. Now, you say that. And so the next person that's on the phone, they're like, well, how many? Everybody said, how many tickets you got left? I'm like, I can barely get it out. Well, I got 2, and I'm pretty sure Barbara over here is about to sell one of them. So the dude's like, well, okay, I'll buy. Like, we sold the Christmas party out in a week based on the Barbara clothes. So pretty sure Barbara's about to sell the other one, right? Or she may sell both of them. Sold the thing out. And the point of that is, an offer without a deadline is like a bull without his horns.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah, deadline. And so that also brings up the element of scarcity.
Yep.
Because people will do more when they think that something is being taken away from them than when
Dude, I mean, it's huge, and it's kind of hard in internet marketing because you hate the deadlines where the date rolls and all of that.
Right.
Even though I was probably one of the people that really popularized that. It's kind of a long story, but but the only reason I did it was because we were putting 30-day deadlines on sales letters. And then I'm like, one day I'm like, well, hey, what would happen if we made the deadline 10 days? And more people bought. Our conversion ratio went up. I'm like, well, hey, what would happen if we made it 7 days? Conversion rate went up. We're doing a seminar in Boulder. I'm talking to Stephen Mahaney from Planet Ocean. I'm like, Stephen, we took our deadline from 30 days down to 7, and it's selling like crazy. He's like, Marlon, I'll tell you a secret. Make it midnight tonight, and you'll double yourself. I'm like, midnight tonight? Are you serious? He's like, yeah, midnight tonight. So I come back. I do it midnight tonight, by midnight, and I'm like getting FedExes and stuff from around the world. And he's right, the closing thing like doubled, and it's the power of a deadline. And if you take the deadline, and it's kind of hard to handle online because I hate rolling scripts and I hate the, so it's hard to know how to handle it because, you know, but if you don't have a deadline, you get a lot less orders. It's just a fact.
Yeah, and that's why things like events and things that with true scarcity, like when, like for instance, I'm selling a handful of tapes from different seminars. You can do true scarcity, and then you get the countdowns, you got the crossouts, and then people definitely jump on those last couple days. Like for instance, anytime we do an event and the early bird discount's closing, you get a ton of orders right then.
And you also have done you do the sold out thing, right, Yannick?
Which is
where you put up a sold out sign when as soon as something sells out.
Yes.
So because the next time the person's like, if they click there and they want to buy it and they get the sold out, the next time they're going to jump.
Exactly. Yeah, you're training them for the next time, which is very powerful.
I mean, Jeff Walker is the master at that, I think.
Yeah, and it also creates integrity because you said it's going to be sold out, it's sold out, and you can't get it now.
That's the problem with the rolling deadlines is like, for the people that know to check for the rolling deadline JavaScript, it kind of sucks.
Yeah, I mean, in a marketplace where they know what it is, it definitely might deflate sales. But in other places, it's up to you if you want to use it. I still use it in one or two sites.
Yeah.
Not usually in the internet marketing world.
Yeah, it's kind of tough in internet marketing. I don't know. I can't even remember which sites we may use it on a few, but largely, you know, we've had to take it off, but You know, I got to say, even with all of that said, it still works.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It still works because of the natural human, you know, just...
Yeah, do you have anything to add on the whole deadline issue, Michael?
Well, the thing is that I would buttress that with reasons why, and that's the most powerful element in copy is the reasons, you know, the reasons why. If you're going to put a deadline, even if you were going to put a JavaScript thing, if you add a really good reason why and you back it up and it's believable and it's logical and it's justifiable, people are going to believe it, even if you use something that might necessarily be seen as an underhanded tactic. And what I mean by that is, you know, it's not necessarily the deadline on a sales letter that's going to cause you to make a lot of sales or to increase scarcity. It's the reason behind it. You know, you could, if you have physical products, it's very easy to do like a fire sale or, you know, Yannick, you did a one thing that your wife was about to kick you out if you didn't sell.
Stop Yannick's divorce sale.
Yeah, exactly. You gave a reason, and that's the point. It's reasons why. Sylvie, my fiance, talks about a story of a website that was giving out free bottles of nutritional supplements, and it was free bottle.
Yeah.
And you know, and they were asking people's names and physical addresses, mail addresses, and it bombed. And what they did is they just added a reason why. They said something very similar to that video professor commercial that we see on TV all the time. He said, or the website said, free bottle. We are so confident that once you give it a try with this 1 month supply of blah, blah, blah pills, that you're going to come back for the rest of your nutritional needs. And that's why we're giving one free bottle away. And that boosted response like tremendously. So the reason why it's so powerful. But coming back to scarcity, here's a good example. An ebook is a downloadable product, and they're available pretty much in infinite quantities. How can you put a deadline on an ebook? There are several ways you can do that. You can use reasons like you were, you know, stop Yannick's divorce sale. You got to sell X number for a specific event or a specific reason. Again, it goes back to reasons why. But here's another example. There was an actual discussion on Frank Kern's discussion forum one time, and Dr. Mike Wuming came up with a really brilliant way of looking at it, and I've been using it in my copy, but I never really saw it enunciated that way. But he says, you may not necessarily guarantee the quantity, or you're not able to limit the quantity, but you can certainly limit that. For example, the number of bonuses that one person gets for after a certain number of people buy, or you can limit the guarantee that people can obtain this particular product at this price. Here's an example: you sell an ebook, and you say, "This ebook has been selling like crazy, like hotcakes." In fact, my server bandwidth has taken a dive because of it. You know, my host is about to shut me down. And if you can back it up with proof, like a scan of a letter from your host or an email from your host that says, you better,
right,
you know, whatever, that's perfect. And you say, listen, I can only guarantee that I can offer this particular book at this particular price with this particular set of bonuses until X date. And
yeah,
I reserve the right to change, remove, increase, or completely stop selling this ebook after that time. So your time to act is now. You know, so you're not saying that it's like going to be in, you know, a book that's only going to be sold by X date. But what you're saying is you can only guarantee the offer. And this is what I mean, is that you can add scarcity in three ways. You can limit the quantity, you can limit the time, or you can limit the offer. And if you look at it those three ways, sure, you can limit the quantity if you've got physical products, or even if you have a reason why you sell X number of downloads, for example, stop my divorce sale or whatever the case is, or limit the time by such date, and there's a reason why, a good reason, justifiable, logical reason why, or you can limit the offer, meaning the specific offer itself with the combination of price, value, bonuses, blah, 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 blah. And in this particular case, what Dr. Mike was talking about is that he limited the guarantee, meaning the time frame that this particular offer was available, because after that time frame, after so many sales have been made, I cannot guarantee that I can sell it. In fact,
it's just well. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, the thing is, if he's got proof, for example, that his host is cracking down on the fact that his bandwidth like was shooting through the roof, he's going to have to increase his dedicated hosting or whatever the case is, and he's got to justify paying for that, and therefore I'm going to increase the price. I'll likely increase the price, but I can only guarantee this particular price for X number of days.
I got the perfect example of this. Like, just like Yannick told me last week that he was in the liquor store and there was only one bottle of MD there. Mad Dog, and he saw this guy with a scruffy beard and messed up hair walking in the door, and he really didn't need the MD then, but they didn't have any Thunderbird, and he heard the night train roll. He grabs it and gets it just, you know, in case, because he didn't want that other guy to get it.
It actually is a perfect example, not the Mad Dog, but I've gotten into wine a lot lately, and that's one of the big triggers with these little boutique vineyards is that they only make X number of cases of wine, and there's only a limited allocation. And
how do they do that? Because do you really buy that? I mean,
yeah. I mean, you have to believe it. If you don't believe it, then it doesn't work.
So
but,
do you grab it because you're scared of that particular wine? They may run out.
Yeah, I'm worried.
You're the easiest people to sell are salespeople, by
the
way.
That's right. Well, One Wind Vineyard really does a great job on it. On the bottle itself, they put 1,282 cases. Or no, it's actually a lot lower than that. It'd be something like 282 cases produced. Bottle number 612, and they individually number the bottle. You know.
Now, they must have read Claude Hopkins' specificity.
Yeah, well, that's
right.
That's a real powerful.
That's a great example of it.
But it's also a reason why. Because people know, especially if you're going to a boutique or a vineyard or whatever the case is, you know they only have so much capacity to produce X number of bottles at any given time. Here's a really good example. There's a discussion going on my forum lately about people who put these wild numbers out there to justify the price of an ebook. They say, hey, I normally charge $1,000 an hour for consulting clients, but I did a brain dump in this $47 ebook.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I had this discussion with one guy. Said it's crap. It's unbelievable. I said yes, it's unbelievable because the person didn't add any reasons why. If he would have said or she would have said this. You know, there's only so many hours in a day. In fact, there's 24, and I sleep about 8 hours of those. And during those hours, I consult X number of clients. As you can understand, I cannot I'm not an octopus. I wish I could clone myself, but that technology is not here yet. And so if you want to hire me to consult you, I need to charge you that much because I have to justify staying up extra hour and not sleeping. So what I did is I duplicated myself into this ebook. So you will be hiring me to consult you as if you were, you know, hiring me directly by buying this particular ebook. So what you're doing is you're building up the value of the ebook, not because you're comparing it to the value of that person's consulting, but that the value of the availability of that person, and it comes back to scarcity again.
Yeah,
but it's the reason why.
Yeah, I love reason why. I try to in almost every single piece of copy I write. And once again, going back to that book that you cited, which I thought was great that you cited essentially a psychology book, but a consumer psychology book, Influence Psychology Persuasion, and as one of the top copywriting books. And I firmly, firmly agree because I've read that thing 9 times. And reason why and giving people because is like that little trigger that just goes off in people's heads. You know who did this really great is the guy from 12 Month Millionaire. And
Vincent James,
right. He at the back of his book, he did this thing where he is good, very good product, and then at the back of the book, he says, you know, well, I'm not going to be running any more ads for whatever because of everything that happened, but you know, I still have a lavish lifestyle that I like to lead, and you know, I broke it down, and I think I need about $1 million a year to lead the lifestyle that I prefer. Now I know that there's not going to be one client that. Or most likely there's not going to be one client that's going to pay me $1 million. But so what I've decided to do is sell my time and break it up into is it 20 or 200? What's 5,000 times 200? Is that a million?
It's 500, yeah.
Okay, so that's what it is. And you said I broke it up into these little segments, so I'm taking this number of people and charging $5,000. And so I thought that was a brilliant reason why, and explained it, set it up perfectly, and you know, there's only a limited amount of slots.
By the way,
around.
In Arizona, when they auctioned off his vehicles in the prior problem issue he had,
right.
they had his own auction for all of his vehicles because my nephew is like an attorney in the state of Arizona. He had his own auction for all of his cars.
Wow.
Including the Lamborghinis and all of that stuff, yeah.
Very interesting.
So it's a great book, by the way.
Yeah,
it's
very
probably
good.
The best book ever written on mail order or direct response.
Yeah, it was very good.
Very, very insightful. No matter, regardless of, some people like Vincent Jameson, but don't. But, I mean, it's, you got to say, it's a great book on direct response. And a really good example of how he gave a reason why to justify the price of his copyright. You know, my reason why, I am $1,000 an hour for consulting, and people don't believe it until they ask me to do it. And they're like, my God, you are. And, you know, it's kind of, I get this story. My story is just, it, you know, I don't get it often, but when I get it, it's a good gig. Like when I came back from Thailand, I had a check for 5 G's from a client waiting for me. That's a nice check to have when you come back from Thailand.
Well, what I do is I actually have several clients. I charge $500 an hour for consulting. And when they buy my time, they usually do it through PayPal. And I usually have a button that I create on a very special private page of my website that I lead them to in order to process their payment. But I specifically make it so that in the description of the service, I talk about 1 hour consulting at, and I put it, you know, discounted or whatever the case is, and, you know, I charge maybe $800 if it's a brand new client, $500 an hour if it's a current client, whatever the case is. Anyways, the point is, I screenshot that and I added it to that page. And I just black out the name
of
the client.
You should raise your rates, Michael. You're worth more than $500 an hour.
Absolutely.
No, really, you are. Seriously, that's too cheap.
And so I black out the name of the client. So when people ask me, do you really charge that much, I send them to the actual PayPal screenshot, which is another proof element.
Yeah. I mean, you're. I mean, we can't get around it as copywriters and marketers. We add proof everywhere and
well, you have to online. I mean, it's good offline too. But it's just the online has breeded a whole new level of proof. And I believe, Yannick, the reason is because offline, for every page you send, you have to pay.
Yeah, so you
right?
have to be at
and
least
so
somewhat credible.
You got to be a lot more judicious about what you include. Online, you know, ain't any more cost of that additional HTML pages that's got the screen caps on it or whatever.
Right.
So it's really taken proof, I think, to a whole entire new level. Just like Michael said, doing case studies instead of just a testimonial. Well, online, you're not paying for the paper or the ink or the postage.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's awesome. All right, so I think we've covered a whole lot of stuff. I was going to do Q&A, but we've gone way over on our time. So I think this is good, and you know, I picked up some really cool things, and I want to just thank both you gentlemen for coming on and sharing what you're doing. Any website we should send people to, Marlon, for check out what you're doing?
So just salesletters.com.
Salesletters.com. What a great domain. All right, and Mr. Fortin.
Oh, Marlon, I own salesletters.biz.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah.
Wow. You know, I was in this gig a year or two earlier. I got that, like, way long time ago, obviously. And unfortunately, I haven't made really good use of it, Michael, to be honest.
You know, I own salesletters.com.
Do you really?
Which nobody would want.
No, actually, typos. You know, in terms of typos, you probably get type-in traffic to it.
I don't even know if I still own it anymore.
Oh, yeah? Well, it's hard to beat the instant sales letters. That's just a great – it's just such a great concept and domain. Anyway, Michael, so what domain should they go to?
Thecopydoctor.com, thecopydoctor.com. And I say the copy doctor because if you just type in copy doctor, you'll go to Xerox.
Are you still doing the video critique things of the sales letters?
You bet.
Yeah, that's just the neatest thing.
And this is what this website is, and I don't want to plug this on this call too much, but basically it's just me recording myself critiquing and or rewriting copy and recording myself completely so people understand the logic of how a copywriter thinks.
Well, it's okay to plug it because A, we're all sales, we're all in marketing and sales, and if you can't appreciate a good plug, then you know, get a new business to be in, right?
Yeah.
And plus what you do is so valuable. I mean, just straight up, it's just the way you break it down. And so, see, that's the problem I think a lot of people have, and I don't want to take time on it. It's just that they don't understand how everything fits together. Like, and you just take it and just chunk it way down, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Very cool. Gents, thank you once again.
All right.
And I'll see some of you guys next month. I'll see you guys soon.
All right.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.